it's the fundamental part of what we do here in the United States. It's the core of our government is that people have an opportunity to voice their opinions. It is bad policy. It's bad humanity. You don't treat people like this. You don't just ignore people, especially the people who elected you and put you in office in the first place.
So you're hearing from State Senator Jason Perillo. This was actually a previous conversation we had just days ago. And he's referencing what is happening in the state Senate today and I believe the state House tomorrow. So before things start up in Hartford, the Connecticut Senate Republican Caucus says it will be addressing the emergency Senate session happening today. We're told more than a dozen pieces of legislation will potentially pass without public hearings. However, state Democrats say all of the bills being discussed have had prior hearings and already went through committees in the past. But the big question here is, why is anything passing under emergency status when we are currently in a legislative session that is going to continue until early May? So for all of that, I thought we would throw it at political reporter, a dear friend of mine, Mike Cerulli of News 8, who can give us a little more insight. First of all, what is being discussed and why is this being done under emergency status? Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's great
I'm
to
good.
Be back.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. So immediately for the last couple of days, I've been like, what is this about? What's going on? And I'm reading kind of basic legislation, kind of broad, if you will, topics that are going to be discussed. But I think the overarching question that I certainly have and many others is, why is this being done under emergency status? Why would we be doing anything during the legislative session under an emergency status when we have until the beginning of May to really work things out?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it mirrors a question that was asked around this time in last year's session. A similar thing happened, a little bit different subject matter, but we got word sort of the beginning of last year's session that they were going to go in a similar style and go on an emergency basis. They call it emergency certification, and of course in politics you shorten everything so the rest of everyone else can't understand it. They call it e-certing or an e-cert, and they tried to okay around $40 million for special education funding, $3 million for an assortment of nonprofit groups, many of them aligned simultaneously with Democratic kind of ideological interests and also with sort of groups that had been defunded, saw grants revoked as part of that early wave of grant cutting that the Trump administration did when they first got into office. And we had a similar conversation last year where there were genuine questions asked about, well, why is this being done on an emergency basis? Why is this being done, e-cert process, as we say, at the Capitol? And the answer from the Democrats who control the building is basically what you just said, which is that February to May sounds like a long time. It's about 12 or 13 weeks. But when you're trying to pass, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars in spending and tax changes, when you're trying to pass all these different tweaks to state law, it actually becomes a pretty condensed time frame, remembering the fact that you have to hold public hearings on all these bills. You have to have them marked up and screened and fiscally analyzed and then debated on the floor. And the Democratic leadership say that time frame, it's not Washington, D.C., where they're in session year round, where they can put a bill to the side for a few months, go back to it, and then maybe vote on it next year or something like that, depending on where you are in the term. So their rationale for this will be that, look, a lot of these bills are not new ideas. Two of them in particular are things we've seen before. The Republican point is it's kind of difficult to say, how these categorize as an emergency, as you said. It's not like there's any sort of pressing a town had a flood that needs money or something like that.
Right.
So it's a tough debate. I think it just reflects the part-time nature of the Connecticut legislature.
I agree.
The frustrations some of the Democrats have with the way and the pace that laws are passed session to session. And I think that they're trying to address some of that today. But I think they're going to get faced with some questions both about the process of this and also about the substance of this, Melissa.
Well, and I think too, Mike, once you open Pandora's box, what's to say it ever ends? So the thing is regardless of the political party, who's the majority, because there are other states that have a Republican majority. I think this is where you could fall into a pattern where if, let's say, the dozen bills that are put forward today, if they all pass in this nature, I think you're starting down a path where you could just steamroll. So, I mean, again, I understand the frustration.
I should add here. It is around a dozen or so, depending on how you look at it. It's many, many pieces of policy. And typically what happens, and I want to caveat all this, because I know we're going to talk about what's in this in a few minutes, but
yeah.
I want to caveat all this by saying the text is not out officially. The reporting we've seen out of the reporting I've done on it is all based on drafts that we have viewed and things we have heard on background from knowledgeable sources. But one of the important things to know about these e-cert bills, which is another question that is posed to lawmakers, is they typically stick all these things in one, maybe two bills. So you get this very oddly named piece of legislation. You know, typically legislation is named like, you know, an act concerning, you know, Milford-based radio stations or something like that.
Right.
And the title reflects the topic. These e-cert bills are, they're so wide ranging in these cases that they just stick them all in one, and it makes it difficult. There may be a lawmaker from either party that says, you know, I want to vote for items A, B, C, and D, but E and F is where I have a problem. So what do I do here? You can't really strip them out. And that is part of the strategy, is putting them all in one, be more economical with debating time, and also to say to people, you're either getting none of this or you're getting all of it. So it's important to note that about e-cert process too, is it typically sticks a lot of disparate topics into one piece of legislation.
Which we would like to get away from that. I mean, we've seen it in implementer bills, we've seen it in budgets. So you're right. You're absolutely right, where we do see that, and that's a huge problem. And I think, you know, to your overarching statement, Mike, it does really highlight the fact that we have a part-time, you know, legislative process, which, you know, I don't know what the chances are that we change that, but that is a huge concern. I do think, though, if we start to fall into habits of where we're going to just go into emergency session whenever we want things to pass, that's probably not a great path to go down either, because I do think you could certainly see where, like, everything that's being discussed, which we're going to talk to Mike about that on the other side of this break, all the items that are being discussed today, they could all actually be great policies. They could. I don't know what they are, so Mike's going to tell us. They could all be really great things. But I think you are now opening up a new process where we say, okay, hey, we've already gotten the public hearings on this. We've already had the debates on this. But the fact is it didn't see the light of the day. The fact is it wasn't enough of a priority to pass it. So now we're just going to do it under emergency status. I think you're starting to go down a path that could become abusive and dangerous. It may not be today, but it could become that in the future. But let's find out what exactly they're talking about. Let's do that. So this emergency Senate session is happening today. Again, whatever passes today in the Senate, probably going to go to the House tomorrow for a vote. We've got political reporter Mike Cerulli from News 8 with us. Mike, what can you tell us? Again, I know we don't have the exact language out just yet, but give us a sense of what exactly these pieces of legislation pertain to.
Yeah, we don't have the exact language, and some of these things do change right up until the moment they're put on the floor. So that's the caveat there. But broadly speaking, we expect the agenda for today's session, this today's vote in the Senate, tomorrow's votes in the House, to fall into three buckets. One bucket is a sort of basket of technical changes to state education and elections laws. These are relatively minor changes, you know, kind of moving commas around in some cases. In other cases, more serious. For example, the State Education Department expected to be able to delay enforcement of some racial disparities provisions in state law until 2030. But sort of things that the legislature has discussed, things in some cases that passed in the House last year but did not pass in the Senate, that's sort of one bucket, which is not necessarily, you know, earth-shattering policy changes for the state, many of them technical things that passed in one chamber but not the other last year. The second bucket is a lot of earmarks. And this is going to be one of the more hotly contested things, because the earmarking process, which is kind of the process by which Senator, you know, Sheketoff can bring back a couple $100,000 to her district for the YMCA or the Little League field, these earmarks have been the subject of a lot of scrutiny over the last few years because of one of the major stories in the news, which is that an independent report commissioned by the state and conducted by an audit group of professional sort of investigative financial investigators found that a Democratic state senator from Hartford basically secured more than $15 million, help secure more than $15 million in earmarking for a nonprofit in his district. And then in the words of this independent state ordered audit, directed the spending of that money, some of it, more than $1 million of it, to companies controlled by a woman whose relationship with this senator is now one of the many subjects of what appears to be a very wide-ranging federal probe by the FBI and federal prosecutors.
Right.
That probe also, the independent audit report found that there was, you know, very lax controlled spending at this nonprofit, and those kind of patterns strongly suggested misappropriation of funds and potential fraud. So the senator denies all wrongdoing, Senator McCrory, but this sort of scandal has put in the spotlight this process, particularly the vetting. How much are lawmakers looking at these nonprofits, following where the money goes once they're given to these nonprofits? And in this case, the most extreme case, one might say, making sure that lawmakers that secure these grants are not then going, turning around, and profiting from them themselves, right?
Well, Mike, what's so interesting, so there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, no, I'm not a state senator. He was just using that as kind of like a coy way of saying it.
Because
I can honestly, I can tell you right now, people are going to be like, what? No, don't worry. I'm never, yeah. I can't do that. But the bigger thing here, when you bring up this story of McCrory, is that my understanding is that one of the earmarks actually is directly connected to this. My understanding is that they want to codify several grants to nonprofits and school-based agencies, which includes $750K to this one with McCrory.
Yes.
That's included.
Yeah,
how
which
in
is,
the world?
Which is sort of a,
come on.
A capital region.
Come on.
Come on. Yeah, $750,000. I should credit Ken Dixon and Jackie Rabe Thomas at Hearst. They were the first to report this.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
They expected to be in this package, and it doesn't look. I mean, CREC is a pretty established, agency and provider of education, but it still doesn't. You know, it's.
I just think
headline,
the timing
not
is not.
Great.
Yeah, the timing of that is not great, and that's just it. It's not to say that it was completely misuse of spending. I think the big thing, which again, Connecticut Republicans were really highlighting in a press conference last week, was that there's such a lack of oversight when it comes to earmarking. It's actually one of the more laxed, it feels like, processes compared to other states, I believe. The way that we handle earmarking is fiscally just not responsible, or at least there's a lot of loopholes there where you can allow for things like what allegedly did happen regarding Senator McCrory. And again, that money that they want to earmark actually could go to something really great. That $750K might go to something great. But let me tell you, taxpayers are like, nope, don't care. You've already broken our trust. So I agree with you, Mike. That has to be the biggest takeaway, is not so much if there were parts of legislation that already got approval before. Like, for example, I saw there was more crackdowns happening for bottle returns. I think that's been in
all.
Yeah,
that was going to be kind of the third bucket of legislation.
But that's
major,
been an issue.
Two fairly major policy changes that have been the subject of legislative debate before, but
totally.
Have never quite gotten across the finish line. And there are two major pieces. We'll go back to the earmarks in a second, but there are two fairly major policy changes that are going to be stuck into this e-cert, as we say. One is, as you say, increasing the penalties and trying to limit this cross-border bottle redemption. I say that one five times fast. There are supposedly a lot of, criminal or sub-legal enterprises.
Oh, it's horrible. Places that are owned by New Yorkers, and they're coming in because they own the return centers. Oh, my gosh, the whole thing is crazy, and they're making so much money. It's insane. It's totally crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So
it's not criminal, but it is criminal.
Also,
yep.
And then there's also a major measure that was debated last year or discussed last year to sort of implement more workplace standards on larger warehouses, namely Amazon warehouses. We've all heard reporting about the quota system and how that makes these workers, kind of have to constantly be, constantly being monitored, and also constantly having to meet what they describe in some cases as higher and higher quotas at work. So there's going to be legislation addressing that, we expect. But just to go back to the earmarks, there's kind of a two-track, there's like the McCrory track, which is alleged malfeasance, and how do you crack down on that? And then there's also the second sort of more benign but still very legitimate track of questioning, which is, say everything's above board and say, no legislators are self-dealing, which you have to believe is the case in many cases of these earmarks, right? A lot of these are going, like I said, to Little League fields and YMCAs and Boys and Girls Clubs and things like that. So, but you have to look at those, where are all these earmarks going? And what I mean is, like, geographically, where are they going? And based on what I've seen, like, a lot of them are going to Hartford area nonprofits and Hartford area groups. And one might reasonably ask, and by one I mean me, tomorrow when the House Speaker has his press conference, you might ask and say, well, hang on a minute. How is it decided that groups A through F are getting their grants now on an expedited basis? Some of these items are
What
actually,
about us? I've asked that so many times, so Mike. Please
ask.
There's a question
of fairness and process, too, right?
Absolutely.
And not to accuse anybody of any impropriety, but look, if you're representing a Hartford-based district and you happen to be the Speaker of the House, you know, you might take care of your district, which...
That's not cool, though.
But,
I'm sorry. Listen, yeah. I'm a woman for Bridgeport and Stamford and Norwalk and Fairfield County and Lower New Haven County and the Valley, and I want to know, why is Hartford always prioritized? And it's very out of touch, Mike, which is kind of what you're alluding to. It's very out of touch. I mean, if you're going to earmark and you're going to prioritize certain nonprofits or certain agencies over others, just geographically, that's wrong, let alone what one does for another. It's broken. The way that we do earmarking, I think, regardless of if you agree with the political party that is in charge in Hartford or you don't, I think you have to agree. If you run a nonprofit in Fairfield County, for example, are you cool with, even if you're a Democrat, you're fine with the earmarking process, knowing that you're going to get slighted most likely because of your zip code? That's wrong. Period. That's wrong. That's just, how is that fair? I don't see how that's fair.
There's always those questions with earmarking, right? It happens at the congressional level, too. I mean, you have certain members of Congress who wield more power than others and are able to, in some cases, secure more than others.
It's
been an age-old debate in politics. And as long as we're going to have this process versus one that is more standardized and more, frankly, centralized in sort of a state government system that would competitively award grants, you're going to have this. And to sort of take another perspective on all this, you could say that a lot of lawmakers, Connecticut has laxer standards for vetting earmarks than Congress does. You don't, for example, need to kind of sign your name at the bottom of the sheet and say, like, I'm requesting this earmark. It's one of the many outstanding questions of the McCrory thing, which, you know, we all know well now that he was advocating for that funding. But that's due to a lot of good reporting by investigators,
yep,
and people who have reviewed the records and stuff like that. But it's going to be, I think, one of the forefront issues over the next 2 days. And frankly, the Democratic leaders and the governor, who is expected to sign all this spending, they're going to have to look into cameras and say, yes, we are confident in all these items we're putting in here, we're confident in them, that it's going to go to a good purpose, it's going to be spent effectively, and we're not going to be back here 2 or 3 years from now with another FBI investigation into something.
I don't know if they could.
One of the points there.
Right, but I don't know if they could say that at this point, Mike Cerulli. And so to your point, it'll be very interesting to see what does pass in the Senate today. Maybe nothing, but I highly doubt it. We'll see what happens. Mike Cerulli, in my humble opinion, my favorite political reporter in the state of Connecticut. I always appreciate chatting with you. Thank you so much. And we will certainly see what happens in the Senate today and the House tomorrow. We'll continue the conversation probably tomorrow on the show as well. So tune in for that.